Thanks, Liz. Right. Good morning, everyone, again. These are inspirational words, aren't they? I think that Philippians 3, for me, is probably one of those passages that I'd say is in my top, if I had a top 10 favourites of scriptures, that would, it would definitely make my top 10. Especially as a teenager, I loved these verses. When I became a Christian when I was 15, and whenever I read this, I felt really inspired. I think, you know, as a teenager, anything about running a race and having a goal and winning a prize, it's kind of, it's really inspirational stuff. But not just for teenagers. I was speaking to someone else this week, and we were both reflecting on just how it's one of those passages that just means a lot to us. And I think it's because of the resonance. You read it and it just resonates whatever stage of life you're at. Who doesn't need to persevere? Probably everyone in this room right now has a situation in their life that they're pressing on with, that they're not quite finished with. And I think that's it. When you, whatever situation you're in life, but especially in the walk of faith, following Christ, you know that you're not finished. I hope you know you're not finished. There's a struggle. There's a pressing on. You're not there. You're in the making. But also it's this rallying cry, isn't it? It's both, there's a resonance and there's an inspiration to it. A calling forward, a pressing on towards the goal. And that's really remarkable, I think, given the context of the passage. I love going on about context, but I think it's so important to understanding what's going on in any given passage. And my question from this is, how was Paul able to pen these incredibly inspirational words? How was he able to adopt this attitude of perseverance and pressing on, given the situation in which he wrote the words? And I think Jonathan probably mentioned on the first week that Paul wrote these words from prison. And if you know anything about the life of Paul, you'll probably say, oh, which time? Because Paul seemed to end up in prison quite a lot. It was one of those things he did. If you thought being a Christian was about being nice and following the rules and all that kind of stuff, if you read the life of Paul, you'd probably have a different understanding of things. Because Paul was a bit of a troublemaker. Paul got himself into all sorts of problems, and he ended up in prison for it. And we're not talking about, you know, Liz put quite a sanitary prison cell, I think, on the screen just now with pictures on the wall. We're not talking about a cell with, you know, a TV and nice canteen down the corridor or whatever. I'm not saying that's what prisons are like. I'm sure we can get filled in after the service. But we're talking about a Roman prison. And I'm not going to go into details about that was what that was like, because I'm not entirely sure. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't a particularly nice place to be. Paul talked about being in chains for the gospel. He caused trouble because Paul's message threatened power. He threatened domination and control and power. And his message was one of liberation in Jesus Christ. And I think that prison for Paul was just something he understood as par for the course. It wasn't something he tried to avoid. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is because of his history. He had a history of persecuting Christians, of wanting to see them thrown in prison or worse. And when Paul became a Christian himself, God said to Cornelius, I will show this man how much he will suffer for my name. So for Paul, prison and suffering, it wasn't something to avoid. This was the path for him. And at this point that he's writing these verses, execution was a very real possibility for Paul. Although when you do read it, he did expect to be released. But still, it was a very real possibility. So that leads me to say, I think it's amazing that this letter, and I think Jonathan also mentioned this in week one, it's often known as the letter of joy. The letter of joy, written from chains in prison. In this letter, Paul mentions the words rejoice or joy 14 times. It's such a positive letter that he's writing to the Philippians. How is that possible? You might think, oh, well, maybe he's putting on a brave face or acting a little bit. You know, he's writing to people. He wants to communicate something good, even if he's feeling scared and terrified and rubbish and is moping around. Or maybe he's got this sort of martyr hero complex where, you know, I'm in chains for Christ sort of thing. I don't think that's the case with Paul at all. And I think his life bears testimony to that. And we're going to look at another event in the life of Paul from the book of Acts. Just to see a snippet of how this plays out in Paul's life. This is more than a theory for Paul. Rejoicing through suffering, pressing on, persevering through suffering is more than a theory. It's his life story. So we're going to have a quick look at Acts chapter 16. And it's going to come up on the screen. And to tell you a slight bit of context, so Paul has basically just ruined someone's business by casting an evil spirit out of a girl that people were using to predict the future. So he's cast this spirit out of her, and these people are not very happy because that has ruined their money-making scheme. It was a slave girl, and Paul had set her free. So it says this, the crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten. After they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer, who was commanded to guard them carefully. Upon receiving such orders, he put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in the stocks. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once, all the prison doors flew open, and everybody's chains came loose. The jailer woke up, and when he saw the prison doors open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself because he thought the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted, "Don't harm yourself. We are all here." This is quite a famous story, quite a famous passage. They're in prison, but then they're not too down about it, are they? They're chained up and they're singing hymns and they're praising God. They're not really bothered. They know this is probably what was meant to be. And they persevere and they press on despite the persecution. And I'm wondering how could Paul do that? I'm not sure I could have that attitude. Even if I'd had a word from God saying, this is what your life's going to be like, I think I'd probably still not be too happy about it. I think I'd still struggle. But what we find in Philippians chapter 3 is a bit of insight into how Paul was able to persevere through all of this. What was it that shaped Paul's attitude towards suffering? And I think Philippians 3 captures some of that. I think it captures his vision for life. We know that Paul encountered Jesus on the road to Damascus. He was a persecutor of Christians. And then he had this amazing encounter with the risen Christ, was blinded, and was transformed by God's grace and God's forgiveness. God set him on a new path and changed him. So we know that about Paul. We know that he's encountered the risen Christ. And we know from that and from Philippians 3 that Paul wasn't expecting an easy life, for things to get better or for him to be popular. Everything that Paul previously counted as worth, he now counted as loss. The word for that in the Bible is pretty strong. It's often translated dung, but, you know, some people say it should be translated something a little bit stronger, which I don't want to offend anybody's sensibilities, so I'm not going to say it this morning. But we know that from this passage that Paul sees life as a path of descent, not ascent. You know, he'd grown up in this culture where it was about climbing to the top. It was progressing through the ranks of his religious background. It was becoming more knowledgeable, more influential, probably more wealthy, greater status. And now through this incredible encounter with Jesus, we see that his life is on a different path. He talks about descending. He talks about going into death through suffering, but on the other side, encountering the power of resurrection. Isn't that amazing? That this man who had once everything had been about status, he talks about, if anyone had reason to boast in the flesh, I had more. I had everything going for me. You name it, I had it. I was on the right path in my culture. But because of this encounter with Christ, his whole understanding of what it meant to be successful was gone. And life had a very different vision now. And we're going to talk about what that vision was. It's summed up in these words: I want to know Christ. That has become Paul's vision for life. I want to know Christ. And what I find interesting about that is, if you said that to me today, you know, you might talk about, oh, I'm going to spend time in the Bible, reading the Gospels, reading about the life, you know, the life of Jesus. This isn't what Paul's talking about. The Gospels weren't even written at this point. We know that the Gospels came after Paul. So Paul's not talking about this sort of learned understanding about Jesus. He's talking about something very different. And we see it when he says, what he says next, the power of his resurrection. It's about experience. He wants to experience, know Christ through his experience. What is the power of resurrection? It's that grace and forgiveness that had changed his life. That was the power of resurrection. He encounters this Christ on the road that he thought had been crucified, but was risen, and that gave him a new chance. And then he says, to fellowship in his sufferings. Again, this isn't theory, is it? This isn't intellectual assent. This is an experience. This is suffering with Christ. Speaking out against the powers. Speaking out against domination and control and sin. And suffering for it. This is what it is to know Christ. And finally, to identify with him in his death. Maybe that means dying to yourself. You know, Paul talked about losing everything. But I think for Paul, that was a very real thing. He talks earlier about wanting to die to be with Christ. Wanting to die to be with Christ. But it being probably better for him to stick around to help out with everything that was going on. So for Paul, suffering and death were part of what it meant to know Christ. But on the other side of that was the power of life and resurrection. This is Paul's vision for life, and this is what keeps him going. When you think about it, that is an amazing vision, because if that's your vision, actually suffering and loss, not to downplay those at all, but they don't come as a surprise. They're not something that Paul's seeking to avoid. He's not trying to skirt around them to get to the good stuff, to get to life. He sees that as the path, the journey. He meets Christ in suffering and in death. That's a very different approach to life than many of us take. And he goes on to say this: I'm not there yet. Because that does sound very heroic, doesn't it? I don't have that attitude at all. And he says, I'm not there yet either. I've not already obtained this. But one thing I do is I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold for me. I wonder if he's saying, actually, sometimes I slip back into the mindset of an ascent. I wonder whether it's actually sometimes, and you do see it in a little bit in Paul, he does get quite boastful from time to time in many different things. I think he's saying, get back to losing. I press on, I get back to losing in order to win. And then he says these really famous words, and these I really love this bit. He says, forgetting what is behind, I press on to what's ahead. But before that, he says this, one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and pressing on towards what is ahead. And I used to read that and think, that's two things, not one thing. Forgetting what is behind and pressing on to what's ahead. Two things, not one thing. But actually, and I've seen this through my son recently, that you can't look back whilst looking forward. You can't focus on what's gone and focus on what's ahead at the same time. This is two sides of the same coin. They are one thing. In straining to what is ahead, I do forget what is behind. That might not mean forget it altogether, lose it from my memory, but what I think it means is that I'm not driven by that anymore. My past doesn't drive me. It's the future that draws me. And this, again, I think is such a key part of Paul's vision for life. A murderer made all kinds of mistakes in his life, but those things aren't driving Paul. He's actually drawn by a vision of Christ into his future. He's driven by this heavenly vision of the future, and that's what keeps him going. That's what calls him forward. And it's through suffering and it's through death that he'll ultimately reach that goal. So I have a couple of questions this morning. I don't claim to be an expert in any of this, in perseverance or pressing on. Not at all. But I am trying to. And many of you are too. So my questions this morning are, how is your race going? How is your race? Do you need anything for the race this morning? Courage, power, strength? Are you struggling in suffering this morning? Maybe you're struggling to find any sense of joy in suffering, which is entirely understandable. And do you need a renewed sense of vision in your walk of faith this morning? Have you kind of lost any sense of what it's about, where you're heading? Three big questions. But those are the questions I want to leave you to think about this morning. Shall we pray? Lord, in this moment, would you speak to us about what it is we need this morning? And may we be open to receive that if we need challenge, if we need comfort, if we need encouragement.